Thanks for being with us on The Takeaway today. I'm Todd Zwillick. What happens when prison inmates get sick or grow old and reach the end of their lives? In the 1980s, Congress created compassionate release. And the idea was to allow aging or terminally ill federal prisoners an early release so they could die at home near their loved ones. But an investigation by the Marshall Project finds that compassionate release is rarely granted, and even when it is, it's sometimes too late.
They just told me that he had passed during the morning when they checked on him, and that they would be mailing me his stuff, and that someone from the place that they take care of the cremations would be mailing me his ashes.
That's Kim Geraldes. Her father was eventually granted release from federal prison after 4 applications, but he died 2 days before he was due to come home. Long delays and repeated applications are common in the compassionate release system. That's according to the Marshall Project, and Christy Thompson helped run their investigation.
You put in an application to your warden, they vet it, they have a social worker go to your home to make sure that there's a safe, comfortable place for you to live if you are released. The records are looked at by the doctors in the prison, they're looked at by the social worker, they look at your prison disciplinary history, and after you go through all of that, then it gets passed on to the central office of the Bureau of Prisons. They have all of their people, several different steps, look at it, and only then does it get passed on to a judge who ultimately makes the final decision of whether you get out. So that whole process can take, on average, just to get an answer from the Bureau of Prisons, longer than 6 months.
And in many of these cases, it's terminally ill inmates, right? So I would imagine in some cases it's sort of a race against the clock.
Exactly. So the process moves so slowly, but at the meantime, you have people who are facing, you know, terminal cancer, other debilitating diseases. So what we found in the data that we got is that, you know, there's been hundreds of cases where people have died before they ever got a final answer.
Well, Kevin Zeke was a man who was in prison for a couple of decades, 27 years, was terminally ill. His daughter is Kim Geraldes. Tell me their story.
Kevin was diagnosed with advanced bile duct cancer, and it progressed pretty quickly due to several other health conditions he had. He couldn't see, he couldn't walk or write, had trouble sleeping or eating. And multiple times he was told, not by his personal doctors, but by the Central Bureau of Prisons, that he wasn't sick enough. They thought that his life expectancy was indeterminate. They say in the records that it was seemed to be longer than 18 months. And finally, on the fourth try, they finally approved him and said, yes, it seems that you are going to die within the next 18 months. We agree to let you go home. At that point, the judge signed off on it immediately. Kim, his daughter, gets a call that her dad's coming home.
He got approved. It was a Friday. They left me a voicemail saying that he would be on the next plane on a Monday. And then Saturday morning, I got a call that he had passed away.
Is there a standard of whether 18 months of life expectancy merits compassionate release, or whether it's 12 months or 6? Or is that completely up to a judge ultimately? What's the guidance here?
The guidelines are issued by the Bureau of Prisons, and they have set it at 18 months. When several years ago, it used to be 6 months, then it got expanded to 12 months, then it moved up to 18 months. What's interesting is if you talk to doctors who work on prison medicine and geriatrics, there's actually kind of a move away from this focus on prognosis because it's such an unspecific science. You can't really predict when someone is going to die, especially with certain diseases like cancer. So it's interesting that a lot of these statutes require this strict prognosis, this cutoff, when what you see in the records is it's very difficult to predict those kinds of things.
Well, Christy, you looked into over 5,000 applications for compassionate release at the federal level over a 4-year period and found that in only 6% of cases, that seems like a low number from the outside. But what does that number say to you?
Well, to clarify, that 6% of cases is how many have been approved so far. So several hundred of those cases are still unresolved. They still haven't gotten a final answer. Several hundreds of those cases, the people died often before the case was even resolved. So the 6% doesn't mean that 94% were denied. But what it shows to me is that, you know, there's been years of pressure from advocacy groups, from Congress members in both parties, from the Inspector General of the Department of Justice, saying, you know, we should use this statute more liberally. There's maybe more cases that we should be looking at here. And what this data shows us is that even though there's also been a lot of changes in policy, expanding the criteria of who can apply, the numbers haven't changed all that much in terms of people that are actually getting out this way.
Is there countervailing pressure from Get Tough on Crime folks in politics who say, no, don't loosen up the criteria. These people should die in prison?
You know, the BOP wouldn't talk to us for this story. What we do know is from what the Department of Justice said in a sentencing commission hearing in 2016. And what they said is that they don't view this statute. They think the intent of it wasn't meant to allow for a broad reduction in the federal prison population, that this isn't the right way to try and get a lot of people out of federal custody. And also that they view it as part of their job to consider public safety, to consider whether someone's initial cry was too serious to let them out this way, or whether, you know, their disciplinary history in prison means that they shouldn't be let out.
Is there a financial case for compassionate release? If somebody's at the end of their life, their medical care can get very expensive very quickly. What if they stay in prison versus going to the outside for, say, the last 6 months of their life?
Well, that is one of the reasons why compassionate release is being talked about a lot more recently, is because the cost of healthcare in federal prisons has skyrocketed. It's grown by, I think, 30% in the last few years, according to Inspector General report. And so people are really looking for ways that they could drive down those costs. Another thing about the federal prison population is it's getting much older. The population is graying. The percent of inmates that are 55 and older has increased significantly. And we know that most of that spending on federal prison health care is for these inmates that have these terminal illnesses and inmates that are at the end of their life.
Christy, you're focused here on the federal prison system, but that's a narrow slice of inmates across the country. Is there a lot of variation between states and how they handle compassionate release?
There is, and there actually isn't a bunch of good data that I've seen compiled so far in terms of how frequently it's used. Most states have some form of compassionate release. It's also called medical parole in some places, but it varies really widely as to how often it's used. And you see a lot of the same issues in terms of really high bar for getting release and long wait times and people dying before they can find out a final answer.
Christy Thompson with the Marshall Project. Christy, thanks.
Thanks for having me.